Dave Fredrickson, Commissioner of Agriculture, Minnesota.
Dave, let's start on the safety front here. Some reminders around railways as we move into a very busy harvest season in Minnesota.
Absolutely, and this is the second annual nationwide Rail Safety Week, and so it's important to talk about it year-round, but yet to really shine a spotlight on rail safety this year. I grew up in western Minnesota, where the dividing line was the tracks, north of town and south of town, my little hometown of Murdoch, and every bushel of grain that went from north of town crossed the Burlington Northern main line from the time that I was a little kid until now. That's a lot of years. And so I've seen a lot of activity on that track. We crossed the track with grain trucks before there were arms and flashing lights there. So you look both ways at least twice. And I've seen the tragedy that has occurred on those tracks. It is so important to keep your eyes peeled and pay attention. A few years ago, you probably remember we had an anhydrous ammonia truck that was loading out at a facility west of town, pulled out on the tracks. The back end of the trailer was clipped. The anhydrous ammonia leaked. The driver eventually succumbed to those injuries. And had the wind been in another direction, that plume could have drifted right into the local elementary school. And so it is so dangerous. And I just urge people to be paying attention as you move across those railroad tracks, not only this week, but all through the balance of the fall.
And as you can attest, certain railroad crossings have been updated, but then there are still some where you just see that X as you approach, and there aren't lights, there aren't bars. And so whether it's one of the newer crossings that has all of the safety features or one that maybe it's not a busily traveled track intersection, the look both ways, you know, follow those same protocols no matter what railroad crossing you're approaching, right?
Absolutely, because, it's always going to be our fault. It's not going to be the railroad's fault. They're going to, it's our fault. And so I follow a little metropolitan transit bus every morning to work. And that bus, when it pulls up to the railroad track, it stops dead. There's arms, there's everything, but even it stops. It opens the side door and it looks out the door. It's frustrating sometimes because they hold up a lot of traffic, but that's their protocol. And I just believe that, from a farmer perspective, and accidents happen when we're in a hurry. Anytime I ever got close to having an accident, it was because I was in a big hurry. And so slow down, look both ways, take it easy, relax.
And it's important to remember, especially this time of year, the infrastructure that we have in Minnesota and across the country, the ability to move, say, grain from Minnesota to the Pacific Northwest. We have the benefit of that, and that sets us apart with our competition. And so it's not only important to recognize the safety aspect of our railway system, but to also appreciate it
and make sure it keeps moving. And those trains are long. They're well over 100 cars, 110 cars, and it takes a long time to get those cars stopped. And so it's incumbent on us to really, really be careful.
Anything else on railroad safety, Dave?
No, I think just a gentle reminder, if it saves one life, if we're out here talking about it and paying extra attention, we've all done our job as a public service announcement.
Let's touch on some severe weather that moved across southeastern Minnesota last night. You're hearing reports of storm damage. What do you know of at this point?
Well, I've just heard anecdotally, storm damage across, from Waterville, Elysian, all the way up on through Northfield. So a fairly wide swath. I watched the weather last night, and they were really focused on where the activity was going on. And this morning, of course, we're hearing that at least four tornadoes were on the ground in the area of Faribault at the same time. The storm moved fast. Not to mention all of the rain that we've had now, so we have some infrastructure damage across that area. FEMA has their guidelines, $7.7 million worth of damage before anything can kick in, and that's uninsured damage, so that's going to have to you know, that's going to have to be roads and bridges and things of that nature to get to that level to be able to have an emergency disaster declared. But who knows? I'm not sure what the damage looks like. Folks will be out assessing that and trying to determine, put a value on the damage that is virtually uninsured. And so that process is beginning right now. There is a protocol that is always followed as you go through this to determine which counties will be eligible for federal emergency management money, FEMA money. So again, that process is ongoing. But I feel, you know, farmers, they all will aggregate numbers, but there's pain all over. As I've said to you before, we measure in the aggregate, but farms and farm families farm individually. So there'll be some individual pain.
Any reason for a farmer or landowner to contact the Department of Ag regarding the storm damage, Dave?
At this point in time, probably not. But if they, you know, please contact us and we can direct them to the appropriate resource. We may not have the answer, but we certainly will be helpful in terms of directing them.
In every year, weather impacts the crop, and we saw challenges in the spring because of wet, cool weather, and hopefully what's happened here in September is an outlier and that we have a pretty smooth fall from here on out. But seeing the rain return and also the storms that we just talked about, just so frustrating for a farmer.
Yeah, it sure is. I mean, we've had not only the single whammy and the double whammy, we've had the triple whammy this year with severe weather, with a late spring, and on top of that, this issue now this fall with the increased moisture. So it's going to take some real drying days, and those are kind of few and far between as we get into October. And so I'm glad to see the weather forecast for next week. Looks like we're going to be up in the 70s. That's good news for us across the state. But yeah, and then on top of that, you know, the frustration that farmers have with the trade issue, it is just really, really difficult to be a farmer today.
Briefly, let's talk about the Market Facilitation Program, a federal program. But as far as how the Minnesota Department of Ag is maybe second-handedly assisting on that. Maybe you're fielding questions on it, if nothing else, Dave, but talk a little bit about the program and trying to help growers and producers to understand what's happening.
Well, you know, it's coming in with a Band-Aid on a gushing wound, really. It's $12 billion, some of which will be available. Soybeans appear to be first on the list for $1.64, 65, 63 cents, I'm not sure which. And, of course, corn comes in at one penny, which is kind of an insult. But it's going to be tough. For soybeans, there'll be about half of that money will become available based on this year's production. And so that money will not become available until we get a good sense of what's in the field, and that'll be after harvest. And we're struggling to get to that point right now. So there are lots of ifs before we actually see some money flowing into the hands of producers. I appreciate the fact that there's some market access money that basically will, I think, to Minnesota, we will see a significant portion of that come to Minnesota in terms of our branded program to assist companies that are selling food products or agricultural products in other countries, which has been in continues to be significant. We're trying to recapture much of the market, unfortunately, that we've already lost to China. We're hopeful that we can do that. The EU, according to what I've been reading today, is buying our soybeans, and that's good news. So we need to continue to focus on that. But the best way to take care of that is to get out of this trade war that we're stuck in right now.
Let's end on NAFTA, and I can't recall talking to you much about Canada, but I'd imagine that you have a pretty good working relationship with Canadian trade officials and with their Department of Agriculture, and as we continue to monitor the negotiation process, I believe Chrystia Freeland is back in D.C. this week, and they're talking about, you know, specifically dairy. That's one of the major hangups here. Anything that you're hearing, maybe you have a source or two up in Canada, Dave, that is giving you an indication as to concessions that are on the table?
Well, the Class 7 is certainly an issue, and that's going to be front and center. The whole concept is supply management with Canada, and the argument is if you're going to have supply management, that's fine, but don't change the rules in the middle of the game and come in with a different class of milk. We had a fair amount of milk that moved across the border to form that ultra-filtered product, and so we're concerned about the loss of that market. I think that's still on the table. That's still being discussed. I suppose everyone is, you know, my dad told me one time that anytime you're in a negotiated situation, make sure that both parties get out with their dignity intact, and I think that's important as we move through this discussion right now with Canada. I'll be going to Mexico for our tri-national accord, which brings together the ministers of agriculture from Canada, the ministers of agriculture from Mexico, and the commissioners, directors, secretaries from the United States, all in one room to work our way through this. And what better format, I believe, than having everybody at the table and talking about it. We won't have all of the ministers and commissioners, but we'll have a fair representation from all three countries. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll take place in early October.